Chapter 33. September AD 2060, Year 4 ERC, Summer. Deep in the shadow of the Earth, Wu Shi watched as the Earth-Moon freighter docked smoothly with the lodestone. Launched from the Vandenberg in California, the senior North American spaceport since the abandonment of the flooded Canaveral, the freighter itself was a venerable Jones Inc. workhorse, a design primarily intended to ferry crew and cargo to lunar orbit locations, now stretched with booster pallets for these bolder journeys into Earth's umbra. And she didn't have a clue why its passengers had come here. Had to be something major, and therefore unwelcome, given the urgency of their project. Naturally enough, work on the Pioneer project, as well as its Pathfinder precursor, was mostly suspended for the duration of the visit. That was for security reasons, she knew, even though Pioneer was already by far the most locked-down assignment Jones Inc. had ever taken on. Which was saying something, given Serena Jones's close ties to the US military. The post-Blink world was a much more wary, suspicious place, and the Pioneer project, intended as at least a symbolic challenge to the diffuse might of Galaxius, attracted a lot of attention from the crazies, as Jones Inc. insiders had come to call them. Some crazies, including some in the military, it was said, supported the Pioneer project because they thought it was some kind of weapon system aimed at Galaxius, and others opposed it for the precise same reason. Some religious types thought Pioneer was possibly blasphemous. You didn't go dissecting God. And still others imagined it was part of some global conspiracy, with an elite lying to the world somehow, or even seeking to ally somehow with Galaxius, and so on. You would think a deep space station more than a million kilometers from Earth would be about as safe as you could get. But they had had repeated briefings on how that wasn't particularly true, with scenarios such as the alarming ease with which a bomb could be smuggled into a supply drop drone. So security was always tight. And so, even after all the effort put into this visit, the disruption to the ongoing work of the Pioneer project and the sheer expense of it all, Chi wasn't particularly surprised that only three of the staff aboard the Lodestone were to be allowed to greet the visitors in person. Of the rest of the current crew, none, not even the commander, Ange Costello, were allowed anywhere near the docking point when it finally opened. The ultimate security measure, just don't talk to anybody. The chosen three were she himself, Serena Jones, naturally enough, and the station chief engineer, Sarah West. West was a previously Earthside-based Jones Inc. employee. Short, slim, with crew cut, prematurely grey hair, much valued by Serena Jones, evidently, and brought up here for the duration. That was all. Even Marina Petko and Ito Katsuo were excluded, the surviving veterans of the catastrophic Blink Day Mars mission, and now the penciled-in crew of the Pioneer itself, along with she. And, after all this fuss, she was faintly surprised when only two visitors from Earth came swimming through the hub lock. Lee Yamanaka, the president's science advisor, and at her side, Harry Regent, in Air Force Blue. Harry had been aboard the Lodestone on the day of the Blink, and, having handled himself well in the eyes of his superiors, had since been promoted and assigned to new duties Earthside. Now, an experienced astronaut with a military background, he must have seemed an obvious choice for this assignment, accompanying Yamanaka on her mission, whatever it was. It had to be a big deal. She had known it since learning that Serena Jones had come up here specifically to host it. And now here was the bulk of Lee Yamanaka, dressed in her trademark loose Hawaiian shirt over an NHSA jumpsuit. The science advisor herself, still a member of President Cox's core inner cabinet, swanning all the way out here to a deep space station. But for she, it was all just getting in the way. He had set his heart on the completion of the Pioneer project. That had become his way of working through the loss of Jim on Blink Day, even if it cost the US and the AFS taxpayers billions of bucks in the process. He hoped against hope that this new twist wouldn't somehow derail all that. Once they were through the lock, Serena Jones herself greeted Yaminaka with handshakes that were quite formally done, given they were all floating in midair. Jones hastily introduced Sara West. The tone was sombre, the greeting subdued. And she faced Harry, both grinned, uncertain, drifting in the bright fluorescent light. She said at last, "Shit, you look hot in Air Force blue. Asshole." Then they broke, collided clumsily and embraced, hugging and patting each other's back. Just for an instant, she felt an almost overwhelming closeness to this man. Harry pushed him away, holding his shoulders. "So, you okay?" She shrugged. "About losing Jim? No, of course not. But being back here helps, actually. And the fact that I'm doing something about it, in an indirect way, anyhow." Harry nodded and, drifting, did his best to straighten up his uniform jacket. "Well, yeah, we'll always have blink day, won't we? But you should have stayed in the project," she said. "As I did, all that training and experience wasted. Not that I had a lot of choice. It's a different world now, she. I wasn't so surprised when the USAF drafted me back. In fact, given my profile with the NHSA, I was kind of poster boy for that sort of re-enlistment." She frowned. "The militarization of society. We aren't actually at war, Harry." "Yeah, but the world is in turmoil. Everybody is waiting for the next post-blink shoe to fall. Maybe a crop failure. Maybe some climate collapse. Even a terrorist strike. And then all the time you have this abstract threat in the sky. It makes it worse somehow that we can't even see it. Galaxias. Just that damn lurker on the moon. The politicians seem helpless." She felt troubled. "I suppose I have heard similar whispers out of England. You remember my friend Tash Brand, who works for the government there? Mental health issues have become a widespread concern, but still, Cox did say..." "President Cox is up for re-election this November," Harry said coolly. He glanced over at Yaminaka and Jones and leaned closer to she. "Which is why we're here. You'll find out soon enough." Serena Jones called for their attention, effortlessly taking command. They gathered in the air in this cluttered cabin, its walls crowded with equipment. "Well, now, once more, welcome aboard, the two of you, Lee, Harry. Let's hope we can make sure all the effort and time you have put into getting here were worthwhile. So I think Professor Yaminaka and I ought to have a quick preliminary debrief before we involve the rest of you. Lee, you're welcome to come to what I like to call my ready room, which is neither ready nor, strictly speaking, a room. She, why don't you catch up with Harry? Take him to see how we're getting on with the Pioneer and the Pathfinder, if you like, which is closer to completion." Harry raised his eyebrows. "Pathfinder?" she explained. "A precursor project. We flew Sputnik, a technology demonstrator, and now we're trying out the dark energy drive on a crewed craft. Gemini to the Pioneer's Apollo." "Fine, Serena. But aren't you afraid we'll leak secrets?" Yaminaka frowned. "Let me answer that. First, I trust you, both. Second, you have nothing here which is not known to the US civilian authorities and the military, so she, you have no secrets to leak. Captain Regent, on the other hand, does have some classified knowledge, but I feel I can trust him not to blab, frankly. Even to his closest friends, such as yourself." Jones put in, "However, that is why, she, I have asked Ange, Lee, that's Ange Costello, our station commander, to make sure she and the rest of the crew stay out of touch with the visitors. That's perfectly manageable for a few hours. This station is a big spoked Taurus. And even though we mined it for parts for the Pioneer, there are still plenty of alternate routes from one point to another. We can keep out of each other's way." She checked her old-fashioned astronaut-style wristwatch. "Shall we say 30 minutes? She, bring Harry back to my ready room after that. Sara, why don't you join us there?" Sara West stiffened. "Why, If Ange, the station commander, isn't included, am I to serve the drinks? She knew Sara was close to Serena and had a high opinion of herself, but he didn't blame her for asking. The clock was forever ticking towards the end of their project's decade-long time allowance. They always all had mountains of work. They were all always aware of time passing. Yamanaka grinned. Good for you, kid. No, not that. Serena tells me you're her top engineer, which is saying something. We need your input. Look, I'll serve you the drinks. For now, let's just talk. All will, I hope, become clear. Or as clear as anything is in this rather paranoid age. Serena seemed to soften. She? Sara? I'm sorry to be so oblique. It must be obvious there is something big rolling down the pipe towards us. I know very little about it. You know nothing, yet. Whatever it is, it's something which, if I'm honest, I was reluctant to consider at all. For us, any side project is a diversion, at best, from our own main goals, not to mention a threat to the schedule. But we live in extraordinary times. We are involved in extraordinary actions. I think I always anticipated something like this would hit us. It always does. And, as I overheard you say, Captain Regent, this is an election year. We all have our duty to fulfil. Another glance at the watch. 28 minutes. Don't be late. So she led Harry through the maze-like structure of the lodestone towards the perimeter of the torus-shaped station, heading for a good viewing point for the half-completed Pioneer. Harry, back in the days before the blink, had actually spent longer on this station than she had, but the lodestone had changed a lot since then, and he was soon disoriented. She noticed with a certain glee as they made their way around the hub complex, diverting past one closed hatch after another. And as they descended through shafts and moved away from the centre, and the colour coding of the walls changed to indicate increasing spin gravity. But, with the station no longer spinning on its axis, the effective gravity staying at zero, Harry looked almost queasy. She grinned. If you need to throw up, Commodore Regent, use your hat. Just Captain, asshole. Shit. Goes to show how your body remembers stuff. Once I knew this place like the back of my own eyelids. Now it feels like a fairground ride. They sure made a mess of our station, didn't they? Unfortunately, yes. The times we live in, Harry. Harry glanced up at him. And people have lost a lot more. I know, my friend. They reached the outer rim and made their way along what was effectively a stretch of curved corridor, made up of shelter units, boxy modules each 12 metres long, 4 wide, joined end-to-end by flexible airtight junctions. Once, a stately rotation had delivered a steady gravity of about Earth normal here, but now the rotation was gone. The stars in the pitch-black sky, visible through many windows, stationary. I remember Ange Costello running down here, Harry said now, around and around, with the rest of us cowering out of her way. Well, the perimeter was nearly 4 kilometres. Even I ran a lockdown marathon once. You couldn't do it now. It's not a complete circuit anymore since the cannibalisation. Here, good view of the construction shack. They paused and peered out of the windows, drifting from location to location. The installations beyond were brilliantly lit. Harry screened his eyes, wincing. Wow, so bright. I know. Once this was one of the darkest places in the solar system, remember? The deep shadow of the Earth. The reason we came. The reason we built our big telescopes here. Well, now it's a construction yard, where we are building that. And he pointed to a boxy hulk, adrift in the glare of the spots. Most of it was a jig factory, jargon for a kind of frame of trusses, beams and girders set out in the rough shape of the final craft, and into which various components could be manoeuvred with precision, mated, fitted out. She made out the glare of welding torches, wielded by a phalanx of drones that cautiously worked their way along the assembly. The drones ran on rails or cables stretched out along the trusses, smoothly, precisely, with high energy efficiency. This was the way you built things in space, she knew. Most days, no humans went out there at all. It took too long just getting ready for an EVA and decompressing later, and humans were a lot more prone to making mistakes. So, he said hesitantly, behold Pioneer 14. Those are more standard shelter modules, aren't they? You got it. And you can see how that main hull has been put together. It's never going to be pretty. We used 40 modules in all. Drifting in the air, he mimed a square shape with his hands. You make a frame of 4 modules, 12 metres long, 4 metres thick, and you stack 10 such frames, weld them together, to give you a hollow box 40 metres long. When inessentials and double walls have been stripped out, the mass will be about that of the old ISS, including the ram scoop, which masses next to nothing. What do you think? I think, said Harry, the crisp blue of his jacket reflecting in the windows. That will be one impressive mother, but ugly as sin. And all of it cannibalized from the lodestone. Afraid so. Well, the scoop itself is a specialized build, of course. Much of that boxy hull will be living space. We're looking at a mission of a few years, and you won't like this. We had to cannibalize some of our astronomy instruments to build the sail's central frame and other vacuum-friendly infrastructure. That broke our hearts, I think. Regent winced. I bet. But don't blame yourself. It's not an age when science, pure science anyhow, is a priority. Not anymore. Which is why I'm back wearing the blue. That dark energy ram scoop, though. I hesitate to ask. I don't suppose you've got around to proving that the technology actually works. She grinned. You always were a shitter. We did fly the Sputnik, you know. That was a decent technology demonstrator. And as for proving we can scale it up, well, that's what the Pathfinder is for. The Pathfinder? Oh, you're Gemini. She pointed to a smaller structure off in one corner of the visual field, overwhelmed by the hull of the greater craft. Just a single square frame. 4 modules only, stripped down to about 40 tons. Big enough to take a couple of crew, however. We'll install a scaled-down, dark energy scoop and load up crew and, well, fly it up and down the Umbra, the shadow of the Earth. As with the Sputnik. No sunlight pressure to prove the dark energy drive. And then we plan to make more extensive journeys. You know how it is with a new ship, let alone new technologies. The more you can learn about its handling characteristics, the better. Possibly a jaunt out to the orbit of Mars, following a Hohmann orbit, more or less. Yes, Serena does think of it as our Gemini program, which was a proving step before Apollo. Ito Katsuo and Ange Costello are down as prime crew for the Pathfinder, by the way. Ange is still station commander and deserves some time off the base. Ito's the Mars astronaut. On your prime crew for Pioneer also. Right? So we figure at least one of us should have direct experience of handling the dark energy ram. Okay. And then it's off to the Kuiper Belt. He clapped Shi on the back, making Shi grab a handhold for support. Well, I'm impressed, old buddy. Not convinced, but impressed. Shi snorted. You'd give your right leg to get that gig. If you say so. He glanced at his phone. But I do know that Jones will chew off both our right legs if we're late for her briefing. Come on. They moved off, she leading. Harry called ahead. And don't think you can lose me by running ahead, asshole. You made a mess of my beautiful station. But I still know it like the inside of my eyelids. Ow! Shit, who put that brace there? She knew that the space Serena Jones called her ready room was not much more than a standard crew cabin with a few minimal extras, even though it was receiving such an illustrious visitor as the president's science advisor. The cramped compartment with the standard fittings, the fold-down bed and fold-up table, the lockers for spare clothing, personal gear, and work documentation crammed into the spaces behind the wall panels. A door to a small private shower room was half open. But Serena had one main privilege, a minuscule private kitchen area with a water spigot, where she kept a coffee printer, with flasks floating in the air attached by cords to hooks on the wall. Aside from that, it was a workspace, a nest of papers and manuals, and screens stuck to every surface, most of them scrolling with text or refreshed imagery even now. She always thought this was stimulating somehow, proof of Serena's own hands-on approach to stuff. And Yamanaka, once she was floating free amid the debris, with a coffee flask in her hands, looked interested, even pleased. Sara West, meanwhile, the growly, faithful engineer, evidently out of her depth, was just as evidently trying to keep out of the way, embarrassed even, she thought, unsure of her place here. That was what politics did to you. Harry, meanwhile, on entering the room, looked professionally suspicious. He held up his palm, waved it back and forth, and checked a monitor on his uniform sleeve. "Excuse me," he said, not looking up. "Should really have let me in here before Prof. Yamanaka. Protocol." "Just doing your job, I know," Jones said. "Sorry for being so messy, today of all days. I should have thought you'd need to check it out." "As you say, just my job." Yamanaka beamed. "Well, I can tell you I feel right at home in here. I'm a working scientist, remember? When I get the chance. And believe me, my offices back home are every bit as messy and chaotic and as gloriously creative as this. I never throw everything out either. Why, I noticed this." She poured through a cloud of roughly gathered debris in a net in one corner and retrieved a crude model, a rough wheel shape. "Drinking straws, cut down to some standard length and glued end to end." Serena smiled. "Well, here you are in the real thing. This was our first conception of the lodestone at the Jones Inc. Skunk Works in California. I grew up with CGI and virtual modelling, but I was a kid who always liked to make stuff I could touch and hold." She grinned at Sara, and they both parroted, "Water rockets in the backyard." "Okay, okay. You two have heard too many of my pictures. The principle still stands, though. This is large-scale engineering. But you need to fill your imagination with what the finished product will look like before you can even begin. And in that case," Yamanaka cut in, waving a hand, "I hope you have plenty of spare drinking straws around, because I've come to ask you to change course, or at least to tack a little in the breeze." None too discreetly, she glanced at a time display on one wall. "We'd better get on with it. I'm due to brief the White House in less than an hour." She, feeling protective about the project, frowned. Brief them about what? What change of course? "You know what we're doing here. The whole world does. Because we told them, back in the day. This is America's highest profile direct response to the Galaxias intervention." And Serena made sure the goal was clear. 3 people, destination Centaurus, there in a decade. "So I don't see what other priority." Jones held up her hand, silencing him. "Let's hear what Professor Yamanaka has to say." Yamanaka nodded, somewhat somberly. "Thank you. Yes, you're right, she. This is already a very high-profile project. The public supports its goals and supports the president for backing you. The polls are holding up, anyhow. But things have changed," she snorted. "You mean President Cox is facing a challenge from that loudmouth Stringer?" Harry touched his arm gently. "Shut up." "Actually, yes, you're right," Yamanaka said. "The president is facing a tough re-election campaign. Everybody knows that. Probably any sitting president would be in the present circumstances. And yes, Stringer is questioning the value of Pioneer. Yes, the president is having to defend you. But that's not the primary problem." "Then what is?" she asked. She looked at him sadly. "The Chinese, she. Your own mother, possibly. That's who." She frowned. "I've heard nothing from my mother save routine stuff, family stuff, for months now." He tried not to blush. "Last time I got a call from her, I was allowed to take it up here. It was because I forgot her birthday." A gentle punch on the arm from Harry Regent. "Arsehole, Family 101. Yamanaka considered she, not unkindly. "I don't blame you for being out of touch. Even if not for the security restrictions on communications, You've been very busy up here, obviously. The trouble is, she, we suspect your mother has been busy too. I bet any radio silence from her started around 15 months ago. Why then? Oh, Mercury. Right. Because that's when the Chinese very publicly launched the first of the small fleet of automated craft from the moon to Mercury. That's why. But we still have no real idea what they are doing there. Jones nodded. I've seen some of the background briefing myself. The trouble is... What? There isn't much of it. Yamanaka said. True enough. We all saw the final self-rep experiment on the moon. Well, it could hardly be concealed. But we think that was a crucial proving achievement. The engineers had to demonstrate to themselves, and to their superiors and political controllers, that this thing, their acorn technology, worked end to end from the touchdown of one bird, the build, and the launching of two, even if it revealed a lot of the detail of their project to the rest of the world. Harry Regent put in, I might say that we've long known the commercial logic of replicator technologies. We, in the West, I mean. Sure, replicator tech was going to be expensive to develop, but once you had it, you could get an unlimited number of copies for no more than the price of the basic resources anyhow. And then you could have a strategic advantage. You could use such technologies to take the high ground of solar system resources before the rest had a chance, if you were the first in the game. Well, Yamanaka said, even if they had been working on this stuff before Blink Day. In the end, the Chinese didn't play that game at all. Any variant of it. The moon, it seems, was just a proving ground. As soon as their basic technology passed this final test, off went the two replicator ships, the Acorns. Parent and child, off the moon, back into space. Then to Mercury. A move that surprised us all. And then, she broke in. There must have been some monitoring of their activities, never made public. Only glimpses, Yamanaka said. But that is why Harry and I are here. Sara seemed suspicious. Why? This is a project to construct an entirely different kind of spacecraft, and nothing to do with replication technologies. Yamanaka glanced at Jones with a rueful grin. I am presenting this badly. I apologize for any offense. You must understand this is not my expected career path. I am a scientist rather than a diplomat. Here are the facts you need to know. Yes, in June of last year, the first two Acorn craft left the moon and journeyed on a low-energy orbit to Mercury. We know they arrived in orbit around the planet after 105 days, in late September last year. And we know that 24 hours later they landed, side by side, in a large feature known as the Caloris Basin, a vast impact crater. And, in the year or more since then, well, we've seen very little, at first, anyhow. She thought hard. What about satellites, probes? I know we had some deep space inner solar system probes, studying the sun, Mercury. Ange Costello would know, that's one of her specialities. Yes, but we had no functioning orbiters around Mercury itself, Yamanaka said. They might have survived the blink when the sun's gravity suddenly switched off. The free flyers, which were in solar orbit themselves, were scattered. Not entirely lost, but they have proved useless to observe Mercury's surface in detail. And telescopes, why, the L-cubed T here at the Lodestone, was actually used for the purpose, Serena Jones admitted. I had to keep it from most of the crew. Ange knew. Remember those Navy guys who came up here, supposedly to advise me on imaging technology to be used on Pioneer? Ange ran the experiments for us. She had known nothing of this. And nor, evidently, had Sara, given the way she stared now, open-mouthed. Even so, we have little more than blurred images of scars on Mercury's surface, Yamanaka said. From all such sources, we know what the Acorns do. They are replicators. We suspect they are busily replicating away down there, using Mercury resources rather than lunar. That must be causing them to modify their technical strategy somewhat, by the way. Mercury is different from the moon in many respects. A different mineralogy, for one thing. For instance, we think they are, growing their solar energy capture panels with glass as a base, fused silicates, rather than aluminium as on the moon. We can see the sprawl of such fields as they grow. On the other hand, the available solar energy is much more intense than Mercury, so progress must be rapid. But we can't see, she clenched a fist. I can't tell the president what it is the Chinese are up to even day to day, let alone what the long-term goal is, and if it has anything to do with the Galaxias crisis. Jones said, replicators on Mercury, though, that could lead to something big. That's the point of replicators, in a way. From small beginnings. Hmm. Sara tapped a pad. So if the replicators reproduced at the same doubling rate as on the moon, 36 days, right? There might be 1,000 installations up there by now, even allowing for waste, failures. And even if their energy capture blankets are scaled down from the moon, given the higher intensity of sunlight at Mercury, the whole collection might span 20, 30 kilometers, or to be very visible and growing all the time. She thought back. The conferences that have been held. When we announced this project, the Pioneer, an active way of, well, pushing back at Galaxias. There were the Chinese, my own government, preaching caution and patience, the way they believe Galaxias may be thinking too. Covering Mercury with replicators doesn't sound too cautious or patient, does it? Sara said carefully. I suppose it does depend on the final goal. But Harry broke in, speaking softly to Xi. It wasn't just your government who've been lying, pal, Harry said. It was worse than that. It was your own mother, who hasn't seen fit to confide in you, has she? Even though she seems to have been central to the whole replication project. She didn't get in touch even now, even though she must have known we were coming here. He shook his head. Don't answer that. I know she hasn't, because the security analyst told me so. Serena unexpectedly drifted over to Xi and put an arm around his shoulders. I am sorry that you had to learn about this in such a way. This evident betrayal. Yamanaka studied him. And I too am sorry. We have known each other for some time. I had no way of discussing this with you in advance, Xi, as you must understand. Xi shook his head, covering his reaction, as he pushed this latest hurt deep down inside. I'm okay. As you have guessed, all of you, my relationship with my mother is complicated. He shrugged. She has her goals, I have mine. It's been that way all my life. He was uncomfortably aware of Harry's reaction as he spoke. A stare, hard, judgmental, calculating. She said, It will never change, but still, Prof. Yamanaka, Sara's question stands. What does this have to do with us? Yamanaka sighed. Well, I've only spelled this out so far to Serena herself, just now. I can guess, though, Sara said calmly. You want us to go to Mercury. There was an intake of breath. That's about the size of it, Serena said. Even Harry Regent looked startled. She realized he really hadn't been briefed beyond the barest need to know. Sara actually laughed. Of course, Mercury. It's obvious. Or at least, it is obvious that President Cox needs to do something about the Mercury crisis, because she's got Stringer yapping at her heels, if nothing else. It's not just politics, Yamanaka said calmly. We need to know anyhow, as a matter of national security. Hell, the security of the species. The whole Galaxias affair is an existential crisis for all of humanity. The President of the United States has to know, obviously. Okay, she said. So you want to send a probe. But what has this to do with the Pioneer program? Harry smiled. Ah, she. You just aren't cut out for military thinking. We can't spy on Mercury remotely. Yes, we need to send up a probe. But any dedicated mission is going to show our hand, America's hand. What you want is a spacecraft that is already preparing to fly anyhow, and that could, with a little luck, divert to Mercury without attracting too much suspicion. Sara snorted.
Oh, I just got it. Do you mean to send the Pioneer?
She saw it as she said it. But that's absurd. Our goal is the outer solar system. The engineering of Pioneer is very large scale, very fragile. We will have a sail the size of a planet. It is an architecture that suits the huge, still spaces out there. It wouldn't survive a close encounter with the sun. Serena leaned forward.
You're right, of course, she.
And I can see you're sceptical too, Sara. But they're correct, aren't they, Lee? This is what you've come here to pitch. To use Pioneer for this scouting mission. Well, I heard about this a few minutes before you two. And I've had time to think. And I believe I have a better idea. She felt bewildered by her speed of thought. A better idea. And a way we can save both projects, Mercury and Centaurus. No, we don't send Pioneer to Mercury. We send Pathfinder. Our precursor, think about it. Our Gemini, not our Apollo. We send Pathfinder into Mercury, rather than out towards Martian orbit. She looked around the room. Think about it. We have her more or less assembled already. If we cut some of the science payload, we can extend the mission duration we planned to, what, a couple of hundred days? We can even provide cover by saying we intend to use solar sail technology as a preliminary booster option. And we want to try that out. That is actually true. All that will justify a flyby of Mercury, as close as you like. And we can achieve our technical goals building towards the Pioneer itself, maybe without any knock-on delays, and certainly without having to commit Pioneer to this precursor mission, before any chance of getting out to Centaurus. Yamanaka nodded slowly. That could work. If you're satisfied with the technical feasibility, and as for security, yes, we would have natural cover if Pathfinder was already in your published development program. I can make a call while I'm still up here. See if the President approves the amended proposal, subject to the usual reviews. Jones looked Yamanaka in the eye. Formally, of course. I have to protest. This is going to put strain on my crew, my developers here and on Earth. And the timeline. We only have 8 years left of our nominal 10-year timescale. I need you to press that point to the President. Yamanaka looked back calmly. If you're asking for more funds, damn right I am. And she could only admire a master tactician at work. This had come out of the blue at Serena as much as it had for him. But to her, this was one vast opportunity, he realised, to be grasped. Yamanaka wasn't done, however. You know you will get what you need, if not necessarily what you ask for. There is time pressure. Ideally, frankly, this mission would be flown before the November election. Jones laughed, not unkindly. Impossible! Then when? I would say a year from now. For the flyby itself, I mean. Launching in perhaps 9 months. She glanced at Sara and she, as if for confirmation. You can announce it now if you need to. I'm confident of the project's technical feasibility. Yamanaka nodded. That ought to help. She leaned forward. I ought to warn you, she. You will have a role to play. Whether you fly the mission or not, the President herself emphasized that. You see, we are goading the Chinese tiger here. Ah, that's what you want of me. I've been around this loop before, have I not? I'm bait to attract my mother's attention. Harry Regent spoke unexpectedly. I'd say it's your duty to be involved in this, my friend, even at personal cost. Again, that startled she, and he stared back. Not the kind of statement he'd have expected from his old shipmate. Maybe he didn't know this man as well as he thought he had. People changed. Well, the world changed. He felt as if huge masses were reconfiguring all around him. But he thought he was going to be more wary of Harry from now on. Serena typically tried to lighten the atmosphere. So, that's your job, she. Try to sell this to your mother to make sure our Pathfinder doesn't get shot down by killer Chinese replicants from Mercury. She laughed at herself.
Great title for a pulp novel from about 100 years ago. She, don't worry. I promise you still have a date with Galaxias. But in the meantime, we all have our duties to fulfill. She clapped her hands. So, are we done? Crew, give me an hour with Lee and Harry here to figure out a security strategy and the cover story. Then, well, we have a president to brief and a whole new space mission to plan. We truly live in marvelous times. Future generations will envy us. Let's get started.